These words are embedded in my brain, a cherished memory of my dear mother. It's a voice I hear at least once a week, and it's a voice I cherish. But she's always saying to me, "Johnny, when are you going to grow up?" It's a something that I suppose mothers and sometimes fathers, but in my case, it was my mother. They're committed to do. And now that I'm getting comfortable here in Cadillac, I'll confess to you that this stand-up guy here, whom you've hired as your unsettled minister, is guilty of various crimes, a passion. I did used to pick on my sister. Some of you met her a number of weeks ago. That's Nancy. Eventually, you'll meet my brother Robert. He's from the Boston area, though he probably won't be here for another few years. I did receive failing grades in school, particularly in algebra and in Spanish, and believe it or not, in psychology. I was able to raise all those grades up to a solid D plus or C minus. I'm not sure what it was. And it's because I just didn't study. It's because I was called a space cadet. And at home, I wouldn't complete a chore, so I was misbehaving there as well. That's why my mother would say, "You're so immature. So try to act your age. Grow up." Since those days when I was in grade school and high school and college, and before my wife took over with the same questions, I've always wondered what acting your age is all about, because my mother would say, "John, why can't you act your age?" But people mature in different stages. However, they actually always act their age. It's like telling someone to be yourself as if you could be somebody else. It sounded absolutely crushing to hear these words when I was young, but when I was in college, I considered it a compliment. It reminded me of home when my mom would say, "Johnny, just grow up." Mom stopped calling me immature at that point. She replaced it with these words, "What in the world are you going to do with your life? You have everything, talent, education, imagination. You can be anything you want to be, even President of the United States." I used that line on a youth group at my former church in Jackson, by the way. I asked them, "How many of you want to be President of the United States?" And with this one particular covenant class, one hand went up, and she changed her mind. Now, in the 1950s, every young person, most especially with the advice of their mothers, wanted to be President of the United States. Yes, just the males. My sister, that's very interesting, Robin, because my sister was not, "You're not going to be president, but, you know, you can be, you know, a secretary or a nurse," which is another, this is where I'm going off text. I told my mother after taking a typing class in high school that I wanted to be a secretary, and that was not a good thing, I love to type. I just love typing. I have a typewriter in the office, you know. And she said, "You're not going to be a secretary." And I said, "Well, what's wrong with being a secretary? You get the job done. It's essential business. And there are a variety of tasks." But I still missed my calling, I think. There's a book that came out just about a year ago. Do any of you know the author Russell Baker? He's good. Russell Baker. He won the Pulitzer Prize for a book called Growing Up. And this newer book, it's called The Good Times. Some of you have read it. It's a follow-up of his earlier book of quite a few years ago. But I have the book Growing Up, and I'm getting the book The Good Times because it continues on with the same theme. But going back to my old book, it's interesting because you really should read Russell Baker's, the two of them together, or at least that's what they're saying. And in his book Growing Up, this is what he says about himself. It's the earlier years. I began working in journalism when I was 8 years old selling newspapers. Russell Baker as a journalist, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. This was my mother's idea. She wanted me to make something of myself. And after a level-headed appraisal of my strengths, decided I had better start young if I was to have any chance of keeping up with the competition. The flaw in my character, which she had already spotted, was a lack of gumption. My idea of a perfect afternoon was lying in front of the radio, rereading my favorite Big Little Book, Dick Tracy Meets Stooge Viller. My mother despised inactivity. Seeing me having a good time in repose, she was powerless to hide her disgust. "You've got no more gumption than a bump on a log," she would say. "Go into the kitchen and help Doris do the dirty dishes right now." Now, my sister Doris, though 2 years younger than I, had enough gumption for a dozen people. She positively enjoyed washing dishes, making beds, cleaning the house. When she was only 7, she could carry a piece of short-weighted cheese back to the A&P, threaten the manager with legal action, and come back triumphantly with the full quarter pound we'd paid for and a few extra ounces thrown in just for forgiveness. Yes, and I know Penny spoke about forgiveness last week. I was asked many times if I wanted to be president of the United States. No, I would say. I didn't want to be president. My mother was present during one of the interrogations. An elderly uncle, having posed the usual question and exposed my lack of interest in the presidency, said, "Well, what do you want to be when you grow up?" I loved to pick through trash piles and collect empty bottles, tin cans, pretty labels, discarded magazines. The most desirable job on earth sprang instantly to my mind. I wanted to be a garbage man. My uncle smiled, but my mother had seen the first distressing evidence of a bump budding on a log. "Have a little gumption, Russell," my mother would continue to say. My mother would say, "Have a little maturity, John." Actually, she didn't even say John. She called me Johnny. Now, what does that say? Johnny, act your age. Right? I mean, Johnny, Ralphie, Davey, act your... Well, it doesn't work with Tony. Margie, Sari. It's all part of growing up and maturing, doing something worthwhile with the lives that we have. And it's trying to stay away from inactivity or complacency. In fact, to be immature means that one is still in the process of maturing. It's probably something I should have said to my mother. To be mature is to be ripe, to have completed natural growth and development, to have attained that final state, being ripped off the vine, plopped into some grocery store to eventually rot or be eaten. That's maturity. I digress. Let me get back to the... I suppose the point my mother was making concerned what all parents want or should want for their children, being devoted members of family, maintaining loyal and true friendships while being responsible and benevolent citizens of the world. To keep things running properly, I suppose it is the responsibility of all good parents to plant in their children some grand and significant vision of hope, not necessarily to be president of the United States, but to find in oneself a unique talent that makes one thrive rather than rot. As Catherine continues to say to me day in and day out about our life together here in northern Michigan, isn't it great, John, that we're in a period of generativity in our lives rather than stagnation? She typically says that to me as I'm shoveling ice chunks off the steep incline of our 90-degree driveway in Traverse City. Okay, maybe that's an exaggeration, but that's the way it feels. And by the way, I'm feeling it right now. I tell her my back hurts. She says that pain comes with growth, with generativity, and it's good for you. Move into the pain. I tell her, but it hurts. Truth is, Eric Erickson's generativity and stagnation are states of mind, and they come and go depending upon our various stages in life as we move from one rite of passage to the next, as we experience the ups and downs of family and friends, living and dying, of employment, unemployment, retirement, and post-retirement practices of art, exercise, as well as the variety of ways we volunteer, not only here in our church, but also here in the community. I read this wonderful article this past week, After 26 Depot. How great is that? Featuring Dave Gaunt and the wonderful opportunities that we have at the Steinauer Clinic. I like your last name there, but it's not spelled the same way. No, it's not spelled. And the Munson Hospital, a number of people who volunteer at the hospital, so many ways that we can volunteer in the community. By the way, read that Northern Express article about After 26. It's great. But in all the stages of growth, there's one essential element clearly stated in the ancient biblical book of Proverbs, which says this: where there is no vision, the people perish. Listening to NPR on the last day of December, I heard a Diane Rehm interview with the English writer Neil Gaiman, who last year completed the book Trigger Warning: Short Fictions and Disturbances. While Gaiman is recognized as a writer of children's books, he has also published material only for adults. Gaiman explained in the interview that the material restricted only to adults is not due to sex or violence or language, R-rated stuff, but because of subject matter missing in the adult material, which he always includes in his children's books. In all of his books for children, one theme is necessary: hope. Where there is no hope, the people perish. The prophets of the Hebrew Bible picture a God who behaves like an angry parent, scolding the unruly children of Israel. They are unfaithful, ill-behaved, self-serving. The results of this disobedience has led to exile in Babylon, loss of the temple city, and even more significantly, stagnation and complacency. The exile for the children of Israel in the land of Babylon tempted them into giving up their religious and political history and their roots in Jerusalem. Why cause any trouble for these Babylonians by fighting for one's religious faith? They'll just kill us. Why not worship Baal? We will have a better life by converting to the Babylonian religion. In fact, why return to our native land with all of its memories of struggle and pain and heartache? We can sit back here in Cadillac and say that now that we have a settled ministry, let's just sit back. Let's get some R&R before we dig in and get moving again. We're in reasonably good shape with our membership and missions, and even though we'll probably be passing another deficit budget, hopefully it won't be as bad as other years. Babylon calls us into exile and limbo, to settle into a holding pattern, to stagnate, to resign oneself to what is and what can never be again. Here at the Cadillac First Congregational Church, the glory days of the early 20th century through the 1960s have come and gone. They are over. So let's all accept this fact, give up on any sort of gumption, and join the rest of the bumps butting on the mainline church logs. But I come back to that pain, you know. It's not all that bad, though our grandson Wesley would say so. He's going through the teething thing right now. He was up all night last night, teething. I grind my teeth too, but I think it's a different kind of teething. Here we are in this beautiful church. Yeah, isn't this a beautiful edifice? It really is. And look at that ceiling. It's unbelievable. But a church is the people, isn't it? I mean, we have this great building, but we have to look at those who inhabit the place, the sanctuary, this temple of love. We here should be asking the good questions. Since we're always on the edge of Babylon, do we go into exile and remain there or struggle in captivity in order to return to the city of love, to Jerusalem, with all its growing pains, anxieties, imperfections? The biblical witness commands that we buy out of a system that immobilizes us and buy into a system that gives back our insecurity, being uncomfortable and challenged and hopeful of a future full of possibility and change. Jesus went through growing pains that are well documented in the Gospel of Luke. And that's what Penny was sharing with you. Here we have his battle with three temptations. And there's the tempter or the devil or whatever you want to call that force out there, three tests that not only would challenge his life, but continually challenge our lives as well. We wrestle with these three temptations. And even though Jesus was tempted at the beginning of his ministry, the story ends by saying that the temple left Jesus only for a season. The battle never ended for Jesus. It never ends for us. Using William Barclay's commentary, the first of the temptations Jesus experienced in his 40 days in the wilderness, which is just outside of Jerusalem, concerned turning stones into bread. The stones in the wilderness, they looked like loaves of bread. And the tempter explained how Jesus, with his gifted powers, could provide material blessings and miracles and, in a sense, bribe people with material gifts. Jesus refused by quoting a text from Deuteronomy. One can never find life in material things. The second temptation placed Jesus on a high mountain where he could see all the world. The tempter said, "Worship me and all the world will be yours." Another way of putting it, just compromise with evil and people will follow you. But again, Jesus refused by quoting from Deuteronomy. God is God, right is right, wrong is wrong. There can be no compromise with evil. The third temptation urged Jesus to make a sensation of himself. But again, he quoted Deuteronomy. You must not make senseless experiments with the power of God. Jesus knew that sensationalism never lasts. The way of love and forgiveness and of service, and even suffering, always lead to abundant life. I find three lessons in these verses from Luke. As much as is possible, let us share our wealth with others. Let us resist evil, and let us serve to the best of our capacity. Here are three visions that cannot perish. So growth and pain are words that really go together, as most of the scientists and church statisticians and exercise buffs recognize. That is why, as we approach our annual meeting, which will be coming up in another month, February 7th, consider your own growing pains. and what it means to be a part of this welcoming and loving and forgiving Cadillac Congregational Community of Faith. You and I call ourselves inclusive, affirming, open, accepting of everyone, including but not exclusive to people of color and people who are colorblind, people living with or without physical and mental disabilities, people living in all sorts of sexual orientations, people living in poverty, and people living in the 1%, Republicans, Democrats, independents, and people who won't call themselves anything politically, theologically, Trinitarians and Unitarians, theists, non-theists, people who are Christians, as well as those who are followers of other religious faiths, Buddhists, Hindus, Muslims, and Jews. Though we may not believe the same things, or vote the same way, or follow the same exercise routine, or enjoy the same music, we are friends, and we are family, and that means the world to us. So let's celebrate who we are and who we can be as we make plans to grow up and to reach out and to be effective witnesses of the beauty and love of God. Amen.